Investigators from several countries are on their way to eastern Ukraine to carry out inquiries into the cause of the Malaysian Airlines crash near Donetsk yesterday. The consensus now seems to be that it's highly likely it was shot down. All 298 people on board were killed, most of them Dutch, but from other 9 countries as well. The Ukrainian Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk has called it an international crime which must be investigated by the International Tribunal in The Hague.
Let me express on behalf of the Ukrainian government my deep condolences to those innocent who were killed by Russian-led terrorists. Ukrainian government has launched a full-fledged and large-scale investigation. And Ukrainian National Aviation Security Agency is to lead this investigation. We ask all respective governments to participate in this investigation and to support the Ukrainian government to bring to justice all these bastards who committed this international crime.
And that was the Ukrainian Prime Minister. Word just reaching us on the wires that Ukrainian emergency services have found 2 black boxes at the crash site, and also that President Vladimir Putin of Russia has called for a ceasefire by opposing sides in eastern Ukraine to allow for negotiations. So if we're working on the assumption that the plane was taken down by a surface-to-air missile, the question is who has them and who has the expertise to use them? I've been asking Maria Lippmann from the Carnegie Institute in Moscow.
It is understood that such kind of missiles are possessed both by the Russian armed forces as well as Ukrainian armed forces. Indeed, in late June, pro-Russian separatists claimed that they had seized a few of such weapons at a Ukrainian base, and this information was actually picked up by a Russian news agency. However, it is something that is very difficult to corroborate. A lot of the information coming from pro-Russian separatists turned out to be not truthful, and this may just as well apply to this piece of information as well. It is early to say, and we should wait for people with burdened expertise based on the information that they can interpret before we can tell who actually fired the missile.
I think one of the other points that people are making is that the separatists themselves have no air power. So for Ukrainian forces to use surface-to-air missiles, they would have no need to. Would that be correct?
Yes, indeed. This is one of those pieces of indirect evidence that have circulated over the past hours since last night when the tragedy took place. There is also other pieces of information that points rather to the pro-Russian separatists than Ukrainian armed forces. But again, it is too early to draw conclusions. All we have at this point is indirect evidence, and I don't think anyone should jump to conclusions.
Sure. The Ukrainian authorities have released audio tapes of what it says are intercepted phone conversations between pro-Russian separatists and what appear to be Russian military officers, saying that the separatists shot down the plane. Now, the tapes haven't been independently verified, but let's have a listen to some of that recording and then I'll get your take on it.
Yes, Major.
So, fighters at Chernuhino, the Cossacks, have shot down a plane. The plane was blown up and we found the first body. He was a civilian. This is a 100% civilian plane, damn it.
A lot of passengers?
It's terrible. The wreckage landed right in people's yards.
Make of the plane?
No idea. I haven't been near the main site yet. I'm looking at where the first body started falling. Seats, bodies, that's what I can see.
Any weapons?
None at all. Some medications, paper towels, toilet paper.
Any documents?
Yes, one of an Indonesian student from Thompson University.
Maria Lippmann, do you put this down to just another part of the back and forth of accusations, or is this a piece of real evidence?
Well, again, very difficult to say. This conversation has circulated on social networks here and then even broader to more conventional media in Russia, and lots of radio stations also ran it. Again, this may be interpreted as indirect evidence that indeed it was pro-Russian separatists who shut down the Malaysian airliner. But, you know, again, as a layperson, I would not venture my own theories. What we can say, there is a lot of indirect information pointing to the pro-Russian separatists, and there is a lot of denials and lots of claims that the information that is circulating now is not true. You know, if we look at the statements made by the Russian official, then President Putin personally held an emergency cabinet meeting with a few members of his cabinet present last night, and he laid the responsibility on the Ukrainian government on the ground of the fact that it happened over Ukrainian territory. But he did not venture any theories himself, and there is a sense that he's being cautious. As to the president's pressman, for instance, he said it is ridiculous that Russia can be in any way responsible for this tragedy, and that Russia vehemently denies any accusations that it is in any way related to the catastrophe in Donetsk Oblast.
Yeah, we've heard denials from President Putin that he was involved with supplying rebels with weapons or with men. We heard those denials too, though, in Crimea, and eventually, after that region had been annexed, he did reveal that they had indeed been involved in operations there. If it's proven that pro-Russian separatists were behind a missile strike on this aircraft, what would the consequences be for President Putin, do you think?
Indeed. In the course of the current conflict and the more recently armed conflict in eastern Ukraine, President Putin, I think, has lost what remained of his credibility with his Western counterparts. He even himself admitted that he had lied earlier about the involvement of the Russian armed forces in Crimea, something that you just mentioned. And there were plenty of other instances in which it turned out that there is no credibility that Vladimir Putin enjoys with his Western counterparts right now. So the problem is that with such low level of trust, actually a very high level of distrust between Russia and Western nations, it would be very difficult to come up with something that is seen as truth accepted by both Russia and Russian leadership as well as the West. This is bound to even deepen the sense that Russia should be isolated, that more sanctions should be imposed on Russia. I would point out that the recent portion of sanctions imposed by the United States was not fully joined by European countries. Actually, the European sanctions proved to be more moderate. But now that this horrific tragedy happened, I think those European nations that actually previously chose to be softer on Russia may change their minds.
Yeah, such a catastrophic and unpredictable event is bound to transform the international community's response to what's been going on in eastern Ukraine. Increased sanctions, an option. Are there any other options on the table there? How do you see this playing out?
I think Russia will do everything in its capacity to prove that it is not involved. Maybe compromise on its support for the pro-Russian separatists. But when a tragedy like this happens, this is certainly a turning point. With statesmanship, with humaneness and wisdom, this can be a turning point for something that is a movement toward peace. But it can be the other way around. And if Russia realizes it's got nothing to lose, that it is still blamed for abetting, for being an accomplice in any way in this tragedy, I think the crisis can even aggravate.
And that was Maria Lippmann from the Carnegie Institute in Moscow speaking to me shortly before we came on air. Well, across the Netherlands, flags are flying at half-mast as the country mourns the death of 173 of its citizens. And that number could rise because the nationality of nearly two dozen other passengers is still to be confirmed. They were in transit from other flights, but at least nine other countries are also affected. We know there were 44 people from Malaysia, 12 from Indonesia, Tunisia, 9 from the United Kingdom, 4 Germans, 4 Belgians, 3 Filipinos, 1 Canadian, 1 New Zealander and 27 Australians on board that flight. And incredibly, one Australian family has been struck by both Malaysian airline tragedies this year, losing 2 members of the extended family in this latest tragedy just 4 months after another couple were on the missing flight MH370. Well, another Australian victim on yesterday's flight was Sister Philomena Tiernan, who worked at a Catholic girls' school in the eastern suburbs of Sydney. Father Tony Doherty is parish priest of the area, and he's been telling me that all those who knew her are devastated.
I'm in a parish in which there is a school which is run by the Sisters of the Sacred Heart, and Phil Tiernan is a member of that congregation, and she's been really a very beloved member of the school community, and really dozens of phone calls have come to me. Hundreds have come to the school, I'm sure, but I've been hearing people in deep grief all the afternoon, in fact, at the tragic news. We're going to have a mass for her in the parish tomorrow morning at 9. It's just a moment in which the parish is coming together to acknowledge her life, acknowledge the vitality and contribution she's made to the lives of many young women she's taught. Many people will be coming, I think, who want to find a space to grieve and try to search out a meaning for such a meaningless act.
Yeah, and she was a good friend of yours for over 30 years, I believe, as well.
Yes, I've known Phil for 30 years, and the thing to say about her immediately, I think, is she is quite exceptionally a gentle woman. Her personality is one that has made her a very beloved teacher of thousands of young women, I guess, over a period of 30 years in the number of colleges that she's taught in. The local one here is called King Koppel, and it's right on Sydney Harbour, and there's a student population of about 900 young women.
How did she come to be on the flight?
She was in Europe celebrating a retreat in Paris, in Joigny. It's been a lifetime ambition of Phil's to go to this sort of the source of their spirituality, if you like, and she had just spent a retreat of 7 or 8 days in Joigny and was on her way home back to Australia. She travelled from Paris to Amsterdam to get this plane, and the rest is tragedy, I guess.
Yeah, indeed. With a name like Philomena Tiernan, can I assume she had some Irish heritage?
I think that's a fair assumption. I almost presume that she has her roots are deeply embedded in Ireland. She's Australian born, of course, but I think her family name denotes her as being a real Celt.
That's Father Tony Doherty, who spoke to me from Sydney a short time ago.